Now we want to talk about Rescue 116, the Coast Guard helicopter that crashed off the coast of Mayo in March of this year, leaving all of its crew dead. On last night's primetime on RTE, questions were raised over when it was known that Blackrock Island, which the helicopter collided with, was not included on the onboard warning system. RTE reported that a pilot had flagged the absence of the island from the system some 4 years ago, but the error was not corrected. The preliminary Air Accident Investigation Unit report recommended that CHC, the private operator that runs the Coast Guard's helicopters, review all their route guides. So why are we still asking questions about such a vital piece of navigation equipment? Well, I'm joined in studio by Kevin Byrne, a retired Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel and lecturer in Aviation Safety Management at Dublin City University. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, the last time you were on the programme after the crash, a report had been released. We talked about the warning system and the absence of Blackrock Island on that system.
Indeed.
These new revelations on RT's primetime are frightening.
They're very surprising. I think we might be talking about a thing I don't like to talk about, which is a systems failure, because aviation is full of management systems which prevent systems failures. But there's a couple of misconceptions, I think. When you're flying on the normal system, we're talking about airliners. We're flying, like I did last night. I came in from Birmingham late last night on a delayed flight. Not that that matters, but it's a very safe procedure. We've got radar in place. We've got air traffic systems. We've got a proven airspace design, and we've got an instrument landing system. The runway's lit up, ready to go after midnight or whatever time might be. We're talking about people transitioning from instrument flight rules, which is in cloud, through cloud, above cloud, late at night, on the west coast of Ireland, where we only have, for example, Knock Airport.
Yeah.
So the entire reason for the their flight in Rescue 116 was to do top cover radio communications between themselves and Shannon and the aircraft which was doing the rescue further out. But to do that, they need more fuel, so they have to go to Blacksod Bay, a place I have been myself. It's a refueling well-known place. It's not an airport, though. The lights have to be switched on by somebody. It's a pad, basically, where you plug in and you refuel.
With the fuel dump.
Yes, but to get there, on the night in question, we're talking about low cloud, you know, it's west of Ireland. The Atlantic, by the way, is one of the most inhospitable oceans. I was reading some Met information on it. It's very inhospitable in aviation terms and in nautical terms. So it's a rough place to be. This is exactly 4 months ago. It's in March. So the wind is about 35 knots. The cloud is down between 200 and 300 feet. Again, the information on Met before you go from Dublin, in this case, is hard to get. You know, there's nobody looking out the window and telling what... You have an estimate as to what the Met might be out there. And you want to get your aircraft in there as quickly as possible. So you put it on an approved path, which has been there, you know, for some time. Apparently, when this aircraft came in, the S-92 was a replacement for the well-known S-61, which looked like a flying boat helicopter. You would have seen seen it, and I've flown in it myself. And it was a very good aircraft in its time, but it was a 1950s design. So it was appropriate to replace it with this aircraft, which had the most modern technical avionics that we can put into it. And it will use a software system to get the aircraft down on autopilot, doing about 75 knots, inbound to land. We go down to a much lower height than we would do or would be allowed to do if we were flying either visually in our own little helicopter, but it's in the dark.
All right. Now, people might imagine that actually these systems on board are, if you like, electronic eyes and ears.
And
in
they
other
are,
words,
yeah.
they're looking forward with radar, that the images that they see on the screen are actually constructed by radar in real live time.
They're not.
That's not what's happening.
No. Most aircraft do not navigate by radar. The radar on the nose of an aircraft, especially an airliner, is really to spot bad weather, believe it or not. Most aircraft are on navigation systems, which are autopilot designed, and they're very good. But if you're going at 200 feet, the point I want to make is you've got to break clear of the cloud and then become visible so the pilots can look forward and see the lights of the landing pad, which is the place they're going to get the fuel at, which might be 8 miles away. Over sea, there's no optical. In other words, we can't go down overland because we've got pylons and hills and we've got the chimneys in
right,
in
so you
places.
Have to approach from the seaside.
Exactly. And you have to let down, and it's a very standard approach like that. It doesn't matter whether you've been there much before or not.
All right. Now, the system that they had on board then contains in it all of this topographical information about bumps and hills and protuberances.
Yes, and coastline and all that kind of thing.
Okay. A comparison might be any of us who've got Google Earth or Google Maps.
Yes.
But if you try to Google your house on Google Maps, you might see that the picture was taken maybe when you had a different car.
Exactly.
You had a red car last year, you have a black car this year.
It's not updated.
So it's not updated.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the situation we're talking about here. that information, well, maybe it was never there.
Yes, it's a bit more complex because according to the I've only read this now, it's the Irish Aviation's business to give mapping information like that. And we've used it as private pilots. You've got a visual map, you buy it. I saw it online this morning, you can buy it for 30 euros. It's up to date. It has all the obstacles you need to fly safely. But you would not be expected to use it to land at a place like Blacksod in your little aircraft after dark, after midnight on a cold winter's night. That's not what it's for. So I can understand why they don't put obstacles below 90 metres. It's not really required because there'll be nobody out there except for search and rescue helicopters who are operating by government order with the agreement. They've got a 500 million contract since 2012 to search and rescue with these helicopters around our coastline.
Now, what Primetime revealed last night is that there had been an early warning from a pilot.
So
said,
I understand.
Hang on a second. This BlackRock is not there. Yeah. And we'll talk about other places that may not be there either. I can understand from what you've just said why they might not be there.
Exactly.
The use to which this stuff was being put was not the use for which it was originally designed.
Indeed. Yes, that's exactly the point. Who flies at 200 feet off the west coast of Ireland in the dark? The only people who do it, maybe the military do it, maybe the Garda Síochána do it, but even then they'd had special training. But search and rescue people do it, and there were four helicopters involved in this operation by government order. So you've got different... The Department of Marine, I think, is the one who pays for the Coast Guard. So the contract is with CHC Ireland, who provide the helicopters and crew and the safety systems. But they operate under the licensing system of the Irish Aviation Authority. They should be supervised in the normal way.
Now, Primetime revealed there was a chain of emails between Sligo-based Coast Guard pilots and a senior CHC manager referring to BlackRock Island and or other omissions.
Indeed.
In the EGPWS. And that was in 2013. We're now in 2017 when the accident took place. So we're
yes.
talking about a four-year period. A source recalled that the emails were sent after a pilot spotted the omission of BlackRock Island from the EGPWS while carrying out test flights to ensure that the new aircraft safety systems were all operating as they should. And probably as a pilot would with a pilot's eye, says, hang on a second, I could be in the dark.
Yeah. In fact, I know about this, you see, because we did a bit of airspace design up in a place called Gormanstown. You fly it visually completely to see that you can look out and see it. And
yeah.
Is this working? Have we got everything in the right place? Are we doing the right angle? Have we got the right obstacle?
So you're comparing what you see in daylight
exactly.
with what
yes.
your instruments
before
are telling
you. Before you approve it for operational 24/7
and
service.
And this pilot said, hang on a second, there's an omission here.
Yeah, and the normal thing would be to go back, I think, and somebody would pick it up and say, yeah, you're right there, let's do this, and we'll do the survey around like that, and we'll sign off on it. Somebody signed off on this procedure to land this helicopter or similar helicopters at Blacksod in the dark, you know, because it's a 24/7 operation.
So, in other words, it appears that nobody acted upon this deficit.
Yeah, and I'm very conscious of the fact of two things. One, that there's an air accident investigation unit continuing. We only got the prelim report some time ago, Pat, and we spoke about that. So it's an ongoing investigation. I have every faith in the people who are in the AIU to get to the bottom of this. But on the prima facie evidence like that, if no action was taken, then there's a problem somewhere along the line. There's also the case not just in Blacksod Bay, but we see that Skellig Michael was originally on the chart as an obstacle, 174 feet. And the new version of the VFR map, the visual flight rules map, is now showing that obstacle at 712
feet.
Which is
his real height.
Yes. I think I know how this happens. Sometimes if you get this map, you look at the obstacle, like we would fly over maybe Kipure has a mast on it, a radio mast,
yeah.
and they give you the height of the mast. But that's the height of the mast originally over the height of the ground, which might be, say, 2,000 feet or whatever. But you'll know where you are at 2,000 feet because if you're lower than that in your little light aircraft or helicopter, you'll crash into the mountain because you're looking out. And it's see and avoid and see and be seen. That's visual flight rules. So it's a reason, there's a different reason for that. That may not be the case off the coast of Ireland where the islands pop out of the sea.
Now, last night's programme reported that the IAA had issued a revised map last month which increased Skellig Michael to its proper height. The Air Accident Investigation Unit has recommended that CHC Ireland reviews all route guides used by helicopters in the light of the crash. But, I mean, you don't necessarily know, do you, every route that you might be forced to take, depending on where... a trawler is in trouble or whatever.
No, it's true, but in this case, if you're letting down over the sea, you'd have to ask the skipper of the aircraft. But most of the accidents to take place are not close to the coastline, I suppose, fortunately or otherwise. If they were, they'd be rescued by the RNLI or someone like that. Usually these are long distance, maybe 180 nautical miles, whatever the distance might be, and you're in a sea state that is predicted by the captain. There are no obstacles unless there's another ship there, and you will not go in. This is where your FLIR, your forward-looking infrared cameras used by the guys in the back can say, hey, there's a ship on the left, there's one on the right, they're close together, they're tied together, one is sinking. They can give you an up-to-date visual picture because it's usually heat-related. You get a black-and-white image in the back and it gives you an idea of what's happening.
But it's terrifying to think, I mean, for any of us who've flown through cloud, you know, I remember coming down in a chopper because we were in cloud.
Yes,
and,
yes, yeah.
The question was, can we break cloud and land somewhere?
Exactly.
Let the rain squall pass over.
That's the whole point like that. If you're in cloud, it's a different kettle of fish.
It's terrifying in a chopper.
It shouldn't be, but it can be. But imagine this in the dark, in a high wind, in a situation where there's stress, your timing is close because you have to do the job. You're supposed to be out there 50 miles west of the coast or whatever the distance might be. You're not quite sure what happened next. Yeah. If you're going to rescue someone, you never know what's happening when the ship is sinking or if there's somebody seriously injured on board that ship. Yeah.
But even that business of being in the dark, in cloud, and you know, you're depending absolutely on your instruments. And your training obviously gears you up to that. So
you have to have faith in the instruments.
Yeah.
I have flown in cloud myself. I made a total cock up of it because your brain thinks in a different way. You simply have to believe the instruments or you'll be in serious danger. The average time of person flying in cloud who doesn't have an instrument rating is less than 2 minutes. They've done it time and time again. You get confused. You think you can fly straight and level. You think you can turn. You don't. Your brain topples basically and you have visual and spatial awareness problems.
You know, I remember in this rain squall that was just straight from the west. We were heading west, straight from the west in our faces, rain. It was very uncomfortable. And the pilot said, I'm going to put her down somewhere.
That was the wise thing to do.
Then you're thinking, where are the pylons? When we break through the cloud, how high are the pylons? How low is the cloud cover?
90 metres is what they are. And each strand, I think I told you before, is maybe as heavy as 500 kilos. So
I remember we stopped in a field. We broke cover and it was fine right down in a field. And there was a farmer in the field and he was wearing what probably used to be his Sunday best overcoat, but now had been relegated to be the wet weather coat for the farm and tied together with a belt or a piece of string or whatever it was, and he had his fork.
Of course.
And we landed relatively close to him, and he came over, and the rain was still bucketing down, and he opened the window and slid it open and just said hello, and he just looked at us and said, soft day. As if he saw choppers landing in his field every day of the week.
Aliens had arrived.
So there you are. Anyway, there's another difficulty that was highlighted by the primetime programme, and that was phantom obstacles.
Yes.
Getting warnings from the system about obstacles, and therefore you have to take evasive action. But there were no obstacles there at all.
When you get a new system, don't forget this is a brand new aircraft, and I've every good faith in it. The S-92A was shown to the Air Corps. I've been in the prototype in Ireland and in Paris at the Paris Air Show. It's a very fine aircraft, to the extent that, by the way, it's going to be used by Marines, the Marine Corps, to fly the President around later this year. They've ordered a number of S-92s, and they're going to be Marine 1, 2 and 3 and so forth like that. So it is a very fine aircraft. But if you put software into an aircraft, usually this is what we call glitches and hitches, and they have to be teased out in the flying training program, particularly if, for example, Honeywell, who supplied the software, haven't done Ireland before or it's a new piece of equipment. I would expect that to be taken away by software engineers like that. So you've got an obstacle that isn't an obstacle over the IRC, for example. But much more important is the fact that are all the obstacles where these helicopters may be operated in different parts. And by the way, it's not just the Republic, because search and rescue goes north. You can do searches, and they have done so off County Down, for example. It's an all-island service in that regard, or even Scotland in some cases. So you have to have all the obstacles in there if you're expected to let down in the dark after the sun goes down in bad weather to rescue people who are floating on the sea.
Now, we know that so much mapping is now done by satellite.
Yes.
And it can be anything from set-aside land that the
Absolutely.
EU wants to know which way is it being used. So clearly there are very sophisticated satellites up there. And you'd wonder, is there not topographical mapping available from
satellites?
There is. You cross-reference them.
But if you put in a default set, ignore all obstacles below 90 metres. For obvious reasons. Otherwise, perhaps the map would get too cluttered, for example, like that, or there'd be too many warnings or too many signs like that. You have to have a minimum and a maximum amount of information. By the way, map is designed for young pilots like myself to sit on their knee and you're looking at the window and saying, well, we're over Tullamore, we're going now to County Kerry, and you don't want to bump into stuff. If the weather gets bad, we have to go a bit lower. I've gone down as low as 500 feet, which is extremely unwise when the pylons are 290 feet. You know, you're scraping your backside off the ground, basically. Not recommended. But off the coast, you want these people to go fast. They're going to go on a sophisticated aircraft. Time is of the essence in search and rescue. It's flying not for the faint-hearted, as I've said before. You expect these people to, you know, literally jump in the helicopter, fly from Dublin, do a rescue, or even in this case, top cover, and then go back to base as if it's a normal job. This is not flying for Ryanair or Aer Lingus or any airline like that. You expect the unexpected. You train for as best you can, and then you have to have faith.
To have total belief.
Absolutely.
In your systems.
Absolutely.
And, clearly, I mean, I don't know how the pilots of the new Rescue 116 or indeed the other rescue aircraft around the coast feel about their systems now. Have they been reassured? We wonder.
I would hope so, because we still depend on them. You know, there are people out there at sea who earn a living, you know, fishing and transport ships and that kind of thing. And we deserve the best search and rescue system we can have on an island like Ireland.
All right. Thank you very much, Kevin, retired Air Corps Lieutenant Colonel and lecturer in Aviation Safety Management at Dublin City University. Kevin Brent, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Sam.